fast. I'ma make the stacks blow, rolling smoke down my nose, leaning on the console. I ain't seen no. That song, man, it makes me want to like drink whiskey and smoke more.
Every time, dude. Every time.
They make that shit.
I know.
Shout out to those guys.
That's right.
Been a week or so. Yep. I know we've been busy. A lot to catch up on. Saw Gavin the other day.
Yep.
That was fun. Good dude, just catching up. You guys know that's one of our good friends. But I tried a espresso martini for the first time. Anytime
nice.
You go to dinner with Gavin, here's what you do. I think it's the same way sometimes people treat me.
Yep.
Whatever I'm getting, they just get.
Sure.
Anytime I go with Gavin, whatever he's getting, I'm getting. He's like, hey, what do you think about this? And I was like, bro, I've never even been here.
Yep.
But if you're getting it, so we order some food and he's like, hey, you want to do a tomahawk steak? I've never had one.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, fuck it. It's like we split it. They cut it up for us. Amazing.
Yep. Where'd you go?
Shanahan's.
Okay, cool.
Great spot, right? Yep. But he ordered an espresso martini. Of course, it's like 6 o'clock. You know, so Gavin needs his next rush so he can go till midnight.
Yep, of course.
And I was like, the guy was walking off. I ordered a Diet Coke. That's what I, you know.
Yeah.
But the guy was walking off. I was like, wait. I was like, what is that? And he's like, what is that? I was like, never mind. May I have one, please? Gavin's doing it. Sure. Can I try it? And I was like, dude, it was super good.
Yeah, they're not bad, huh?
You've had one?
Of course.
And you didn't.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I know, it's like everyone listening right now is like, what a fucking idiot. You've never had one?
Megan gets those and all. If she gets one, I'll get one.
They're really good, dude.
Yeah.
Are those girl drinks?
No, it's good like after a dinner.
Yeah.
You know, is that when you guys did it?
Nope.
Yeah.
They brought it to the table right away. It did taste good like while you're just eating some different food. But yeah, I could see like after like a dessert or something like that, you've had a meal or dessert and like just having some espresso, but there's still some alcohol to it.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
It was pretty good. But a lot of moving parts, man. Like we've been just shaking and moving. There's a lot going on in real estate. You know, we've talked about that. NAR's making some changes or you know, attempting a settlement. Hasn't gone through yet, but it's just, you know, good to keep it neutral because this is an entrepreneur podcast. Mm-hmm. And there's enough specifics in real estate and enough motherfuckers talking about hypotheticals and shit. It's like, we'll leave the weeds out of it. But long story short, it can just change the way the awareness behind how agents get paid from, you know, listings and mainly from the buy side. And, you know, sellers can still pay for buyers, et cetera, but it's just bringing more awareness that, you know, they don't necessarily have to, even though they know that, but hey, buyers just might be on the hook a little bit more, even though they also know that. Yep. It's just never really. It's kind of like jaywalking, dude. Like everyone knows. It's just, but it's not like this thing. But imagine like if cops just started cracking down on jaywalking. It's it's like, whoa, hold on. And they're like, it's illegal. It's like, well, we all know that. But it's just kind of like this been the saying that's just not really a, you know, a huge deal. And then making it a big deal isn't necessarily bettering anything. There's a lot of awareness within real estate, right? And they're creating some attention around some things that, obviously I'm being neutral.
Have you heard the conspiracy?
It's political, bro.
They're
trying to shove this through. Like when we were talking to Jesse, they're trying to shove this through like they were doing with the Obama administration. They ran out of time. Obviously, it wasn't going to work with a healthier government. And then now they're trying to push it through before elections.
And even deeper. So the whole like, you've heard like the 15-minute cities and stuff like that, right? So basically the 15-minute city concept that they're developing, a lot of people say that's what they're building in Hawaii now, that they have all this open space conveniently.
If you guys don't know, Eli knows everything about the Bible and conspiracy theories. Like, he's one of the most interesting dudes to talk to when it comes to any of this.
Well, when you boil it down, man, you're like, it's enough to just go, And so these 15-minute cities, essentially, it's...
They can build it in 15 minutes?
No, you're supposed to be able to get to anything that you possibly... You never have to leave the city.
Oh.
Right? How convenient is that? And so
they can blow you up?
So everything, you're just controlled. So everything's in there that you need. Your doctors, your groceries, small unit homes, you know, apartments, condos, like stacked home things.
Ask Chicago
if
that works.
Yeah, exactly. But they're trying to essentially... They are making these 15-minute cities. But what they were saying is a law like this, man, this gives even more leverage to BlackRock. And we already saw like in the past two, three years, like BlackRock coming in and beating out all these first-time homebuyers, beating out just everybody, just buying everything for cash, right? These homes, so that BlackRock owns all these homes now. And essentially they're like, they're trying to just create more renters, give more leverage to massive organizations like BlackRock, and essentially create a place where it's just harder for people to buy. So they're stuck renting. These massive corporations are making even more money and being in control and controlling the ownership of homes. And
but that won't make a 15-minute city, though.
No, they're going to make 15-minute cities. And then it's so damn convenient to live there and so cheap to live there.
And then suburbias die. Or are they going to make the, or is every suburbia going to be a little 15-minute city in itself?
I don't know.
Because you got grocery, you got hospitals where I live.
Yeah, but this is like, look at this as like more of like a shopping mall per se, right? Mm-hmm. To where it's like, it literally is like.
But then why would BlackRock want to buy all these fucking houses up to put renters in them? Because then they'll never go into the actual 15-minute city. They're living 40 minutes out of the city in suburbia renting the house.
But they own the real estate and then.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. But bottom line is we're ahead of the curve.
Yep.
We're making our pivots.
Here's the lesson in all of this, right? And I got to, you know, there was a question on Instagram last night about like just uncertainty in business, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a good question to think of conceptually because it's like, well, hey, I'm not sure if I should make a pivot or if I should just make a change or I'm just uncertain within business. And it's like, welcome to business. Welcome to life.
Oh, yeah.
Like even if you don't own a business, like when I was a cop, I felt like there was more uncertainty as a cop than as an entrepreneur because I was handcuffed to this department and my position and what people thought of me and what my bosses thought of me. And was I doing okay? Was I not doing okay? And I did okay. There's no underlying theme there. I did just fine. It's just the thought of it, right? Showing up every day and having a boss or having a sergeant and do they like me today? Do they not? Man, he's talking to me less today. Is he in a bad mood? And the reality is it's probably got nothing to do with you. The dude's probably having a hard day, man. He's a cop too, or he's got a family too, but it's sometimes, yeah, you do rub somebody the wrong way, or sometimes like they do have it out for you or who knows, right? Like, or you're trying to make a judgment call on the street the best that you can. And some people don't think that was the right decision. And then right. They're going to take your split second decision. And then they're going to try to dissect that for the next 12 fucking months in a courtroom.
It's crazy.
A split second decision gets 24 months of court hearings and different things and watch it in slow mo. It's like, you're not thinking in slow mo.
Yep.
It's just weird, right? Yeah. And like none of that happened. I'm not saying there's anything there underlying that happened to me. None of that happened. I'm just speaking to what was possible in my industry. You look at, you know, like my significant other, she's great at what she does. She's got a huge position, a lot of influence, and there's a boss that oversees a department, man. And they're driving it into the fucking ground, you know, or as they downsize, whether you're great at what you can do or not, if they outsource it, do you become irrelevant or not irrelevant? You're better than what they can outsource it for, but the company doesn't necessarily even need that standard anymore. They're just outsourcing and, you know, it's like, and she's fine. She's good, but she's even had those conversations with herself. So what I'm getting at is danger isn't just for entrepreneurs.
That's right.
Right. Like there's uncertainty even working for corporations and the moves they're making and the decisions that they're making and whether that company is going to stay around or grow. And if they grow, you could be left out. If they downsize, you could be left out. If they change their identity and what they want to do, you could be left out. If somebody doesn't like you, who's in charge of you, you could be left out. The freedom within entrepreneurship is, yes, there's a lot of risk, but you've got the freedom to make pivots at your leisure, how you see fit. And if you're going to approach entrepreneurship without that level of tenacity and productivity and hard work, if you're just going to treat it like a 9-to-5 and hope you do okay, I don't know how well you're going to do. So, you know, when it comes to directly in real estate, we've got some things in private that we're doing behind the scenes that aren't for this podcast. We're preparing a lot of different stuff for our agents learning, understanding, and executing on how to be a better agent that best represents himself to sellers and to buyers, ultimately making sure that they're going to be fine.
Yep.
And they will be fine, and real estate will be fine. But it just brings thoughts of, like, the way you and I are navigating this pivot, I didn't lose any sleep over it.
Mm-mm.
Not because I'm, like, unaware of what it is or the magnitude of change. It's just that we've got equanimity. Mm-hmm. We've been a part of COVID. We've been a part of post-COVID. We've been a part of interest rates. Now we're part of this NAR pivot. And it's like, yeah, what else is new? And hey, when rates were great, oh, that was a great time in real estate. Maybe, but when there's 2% interest rates, there's 57,000 offers on a home. So no, not necessarily. If you're not putting your buyers in a position to win and teaching them how to be great at understanding you to put together a great offer for a seller. You're like, dude, I remember on Facebook, you would have agents literally, and I'm not making fun of anybody, literally typing on Facebook how their clients were in tears. And even the realtors were in tears because they've submitted offers on 16 homes,
yeah.
17 homes, 18 homes, and they're not winning. And it's twofold. There's a better way to do it as an agent. You obviously don't have the best circle around you to prep, put together, and communicate a great offer. You and I, even during those times, we were averaging 2 offers per closing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We were not putting offers for 16 clients.
No.
Or excuse me, on 16 homes for one client.
No.
We did a great job back then, but it's because we were prepared for what was going on in our brand and our business, and our level of execution was great. So I just feel like we can navigate pivots, and we've got the equanimity to do so because of how well we're prepared in business. So we're approaching this thing the same way. And I think sometimes that, like, maybe I don't give ourselves enough credit for what we've prepared ourselves to do because I am so busy figuring out the next level of value. Like, even before this NAR thing came out, everything we were building, it's like we were doing it anyway.
That's what I was going to say. We've been preparing for this for years.
And it was not that we were preparing for anything specific. It's mm-hmm. just understanding how to level up and be better at business, yeah. right? So,
yep.
you know, not getting too specific on NAR today. We've done that privately with our agents. We're coming up with a ton of things as far as just preparedness for them, you know, not just to learn, but to execute with. Yep. And they're going to be fine. So if you're listening to this and you're a realtor and you're not a part of our networks, please just throw us a DM. We'll make sure we get you taken care of. But it's interesting there, right? So, it's like, I don't know how to say it, but it's no different than like in sports, right? Like, you don't know which game is going to be hard. You don't know how far you're going to make it in season, but like, you got to approach the start of that season, right? The mentality of it, like you're going to the Super Bowl. Like, everything matters all the time. And like, you know, nothing's ever as good as you think it's going to be.
Yep.
But it's also never going to be as bad as you think it's going to be if you're prepared, right? Like,
right.
Or, you can flip that to the individual. You're never as good as you think you are. You're also never as bad as you think you are, right? Like, and I didn't invent these quotes, but you got to live by them, right? Because it keeps you focused right there, you know, in the meat of it, of constant improvement all the time. For what?
Yeah.
Man, just for the betterment of our business. In case what? In case I don't know. That's the whole fucking point, the uncertainty of it, of knowing I'm going to build this Noah's Ark the best that I can, knowing that there's going to be storms that I'm unaware of or can't identify with. But if I'm leveling up and preparing myself, you know, like, I will withstand a storm. If anything, some of these storms for us lately have been opportunities.
Oh, completely. Almost every storm is
completely different podcast, right? Of like how storms and obstacles are actually opportunities to get ahead. Once you understand and get good enough at business, they become an opportunity.
It's true. It's true. And that comes down to, man, like the other saying of like, the only constant is change, mm-hmm. right? I think the only thing you can actually depend on in business is that things are always going to be fucking changing. Yeah. And you always need to be working on getting better. And man, another thing that I think a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with this, and especially real estate agents, is that they come into it with the mindset. Let's say you have your auto detailing company, right? Yeah, you own your business. Sure, you can call yourself an entrepreneur, right? But did you just create a job for yourself?
Yeah, you're self-employed.
You're self-employed, right? And if there's a massive difference, a lot of people don't understand that distinction between creating a business out of the job of real estate, right? Yep. Two very, very different things. On the surface, it may look like you're doing the same thing. You're a real estate
agent. And we see some of them. And do we coach some of them, right? Yeah. Some of them struggle with that. And like, the number one thing that we see people struggle with when we're coaching is the stuff that they need to be doing, they don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. Your back end, your systems and processes, your call to actions, your CRM, if you guys don't know what that is, like your client relationship management system, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you don't have a great follow-up, a great system and a process for your book of business, you are so mildly interesting in business, it's not even funny. And I'm not saying that to insult you. I'm saying that to get you to understand, because we've got guys that are around us, man, and all good dudes. You need the best salesman all you want. I'm good with that. But you're still trading time for money.
Yep.
You're still trading time for money. There's not going to be a way to scale. And even if there's some residual that you're getting on it, even after a sale, you're not capitalizing on people that have slipped through the cracks, people that might want to buy a different product from you for an upsell. If you're not putting people into a database and showing a certain level of care and a certain level of keeping in touch and creating opportunity and taking initiative and in furthering that relationship, dude, it's so one-dimensional. And in addition to that, if you can't figure out how to build that within your one lane of business, you're not going to open up a second. You're not going to open up a third. Because the whole reason why you and I can have time to sit here and fucking talk into these mics or operate five different companies going on six, we'll talk about that in a second. Mm-hmm. How? Well, there's the right people in place. There's lanes of focus to it. There's infrastructure and there's systems and there's processes that leverage so we don't have to just manage that time with sweat, with elbow grease and just doing the work personally. There right. has to be those things in place. Some of it's automated. Some of it's through CRMs and technology. Some of it's just other employees that are now in position to do those things. And look, we're chatting today and partnering with some of our partners and buying an escrow company. How the fuck does that happen? First of all, it happens by continuing to level up and building, you know, just a bigger, a better circle, or as you level up in business, bigger opportunities become available. As they become available, your ability to make that investment grow is going to be based off of anyone involved. So there's four of us involved in this. Excuse me, five of us. The five of us that are involved, if we're not all great at what we do to leverage and scale this business, it won't grow.
Correct.
It won't. But what you and I bring to the table and why they wanted us to partner in purchasing this escrow company is because of our skill set and what we've built and developed that will contribute to this company that helps that company grow. So you almost have to like build the first thing
yep.
that then you can take as a thesis, as a template, as a machine, and then you plug this machine, this skill set into the next thing and you build the next thing. If you're going to keep trading time for money, the next opportunity does not happen for you.
Mm-hmm.
It just yep. doesn't, right? Yep. So like when people choose not to, it's like, man, I wish they knew how entry level, like I don't care how much money you make at doing a little hustle and talking to people and making a buck. And look, I respect it. But being a great salesman, being a great hustler at that level, like I'd consider that being a great infantry Marine. I love that. And that's arguably the best place you should start in business.
Yeah.
It's getting fucking great at sales.
Yep.
Because you're the point of contact to a customer. You're going to figure out bitches, moans, complaints, what influences them, what they need, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're just going to stay at this level and you never want, and imagine like military being your business. So it's yours. You're not just a member of the military. The military is your business. You're never going to be a platoon sergeant, a platoon commander, a battalion commander, a general, because you've never replaced yourself. You've never implemented different things. And you're always right. just this, you're always just this one person. You're always just this one person doing this one thing and you're trading time for money. And like, man, it's not only are you vulnerable, right? Because you're one dimensional. It's also like all of your efforts of what you've done per individual sale. It's like such the biggest waste possible of everything that it could be, right? Yeah, but sometimes yeah. when guys make a buck and they're doing pretty well, they're so focused on what they are. And it's like, dude, you're so proud of what you are. You're fucking missing what this could be. And it's like you're looking at money made versus money never made.
Correct.
And it's yeah. like, that's where you're so elementary. Mm-hmm. And it's like, fuck, man. And it's like, I wish people had more ambition to understand opportunity missed versus just money directly in their pocket. Like, look at me. I'm making $1 million a year. I'm making $500,000 a year. I'm making $2 million a year. Like, it doesn't matter, right? Like, but I do see it from guys that are making $400 a year, $500 a year. It's like, and they're spending every dime of it. And it's like, look at me. Look, it's like, dude, I'm stoked for you because you are great like this thing. But like, you're so busy counting the money you're making, you aren't even seeing all the money you're missing that's flying right over your fucking head.
Yep.
And you talk about, you know, providing for your family, contributing to nonprofits or to folks that need something because of your ability to level up and create that opportunity. I always talk about Sal Frisella giving money to Haiti. He's adopted a kid in Haiti. They yep. built schools in Haiti. Do you know what they did to contribute? They didn't have to go through nonprofits and play these Mickey Mouse games. They wrote a fucking check, dude.
Yep.
Him, Andy Frisella, like these guys, like they do so well. Now they have the ability to just give back where they see fit. Their fathers, they're adopting kids in other countries. It's like, dude, I admire it. That's awesome, right? But if you look at first form, right, it's like, buddy, do you know how many different lanes of income going to that?
Oh, man.
Like they're trying to become the next Amazon. Yep. You don't think they have their hands in distribution and yep. other stuff? You yep. think they just make money on protein?
It's a machine. It comes back to the machine you mentioned earlier.
And they can implement that everywhere, right? But it's like, and I'm kind of speaking to a handful of people I see in my head right now, you know, because whether you're newer to something or whether you haven't made a lot of money yet, like it's still conceptually the same thing of what you have to build from the beginning. And then these other guys, man, that are doing a little bit of money, and I'm proud of them. It's like you almost have to unlearn this bad habit you have of showing it off or being so proud of what you're making because you're not seeing what you're missing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's like there's a character flaw there that they almost have to unlearn to then relearn the right way to go about business, right? Because at the end of the day, regardless of that, dude, you're still right. Self-employed.
Right. And that comes down to like skill sets come to mind, right? And this is something that on our group training this past week, the topic came up. And then I saw this post yesterday from Alex Ramosi that coincided with it. And it's the people that let that, even the words come out of their mouth, the whole like, oh, I'm not a tech person, right? Yeah. Or, oh, I'm not a numbers person.
That one.
And it's like, man, do you know? And we were just in our group training the day before having that whole conversation of like, hey, by you having this preconceived notion of like, hey, I'm not a tech person, tells us really what you're just saying is I'm not willing to learn.
And just say that instead of saying the other one, because you're just rationalizing your own laziness. You're rationalizing your own lack of ambition to want to build that. Like,
yep.
And it's like, it goes into the whole thing of, hey, you should just be self-employed. That's all you should be. That's all you're going to be. Or you don't even belong in this world. You should go check in and work a 9-to-5 and have something put on your desk, and you should just do a workload for that day, check in and check out. Like,
yeah.
If you're, you know, like we had cops, and it's no disrespect to police officers, right? Like, I'm not going there. But there are officers, man, that they would just handle their calls for service, man. They're not going to go do traffic. They're not going to go hunt felony warrants. They're not going to go hunt misdemeanor warrants. They're not going to go do anything proactive. They're just going to hang out for their shift, and they're going to answer their calls for service. And that's fine. But then there's a lot of other guys that choose to approach that police work very proactively with finding real criminals, right? And then, but here's where you get to. It's like, well, which one's smarter? Because you're not getting paid anymore to go do more of that work. If anything, you're creating more risk because you're going to have more uses of force. You're going to have more investigations because you're doing self-initiating police work, which means you're initiating contact with people versus, well, hey, I got dispatched to this call, so I went, and here's what happened. If it gets out of control, you got dispatched there. Versus if you go initiate contact with the criminal and something happens, it's like, well, were you supposed to be there in the first place? No, you weren't necessarily supposed to be there, but you're doing proactive police work. But then your judgment of proactive police work is now in question versus a 911 call coming in and you being dispatched somewhere. It's not the same.
Right.
So then you start seeing these guys that just handle their calls for service, and you're like, maybe those guys know something some of the other guys don't know. Maybe they're doing it for a reason. Maybe they're playing it safe because of certain risks or whatnot, right? And I'm keeping it neutral, you know, by design. But then it's like, take that same mentality, remove the police world out of it, and just look at entrepreneurs. Dude, some of them are just gonna open up shop and kind of work 9-to-5. And if people come their way, they do. And if they don't, they don't. And they'll kind of mildly maybe do a couple of things to grow some business, but not much. Versus the guy that will self-initiate action plans toward growth.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, in this world of entrepreneurship versus police work, not only is it encouraged, it's kind of the standard. The standards are opposite. The standard is that if you want to grow, if you want to survive.
Yep.
So if you just don't have that mentality, and if you just like, man, I just want to do as little as possible to get by, I don't know how to make that successful.
Yeah, 100%. Especially when those same people have the expectations of the same potential reward, right? It's a clear input of risk, output of potential reward, right?
What was it, Patrick Bet David, that said like the most dangerous or most toxic people in this world are the lazy, ambitious type? Mm,
yeah. Yeah, it's that's like, a good quote. Dude, yeah.
It's like, fuck.
And they're only creating a super hard life for themselves. Right. Mm-hmm. They're only doing that because,
and they're hard to be around because they're not necessarily gonna, like, if they talk well and they're ambitious and they can speak to something, like it's attractive, it's romantic, yet they're not necessarily doing much for us, and you end up doing the work.
Yeah.
This is where being a number two in a company could really hurt you, depending on the opportunity.
Oh yeah.
Right? Like this is where you have to navigate, like, should I be a number two? Should I be a number one?
Yeah.
You know, like it just, or should I be back in the corporate? But either way, it's like, it's just interesting. The more vetted we're getting in real estate, the more storms that you see, and you're just like, everyone's such a, not everyone, that's the wrong word. A lot of folks are such a victim of like it correlates to boot camp, buddy. When I was in boot camp, and I'm glad there was a couple guys around me in boot camp because it helped my mentality. Some guys are just in boot camp, buddy, and like they're not going to cause a stink. They're not going to do the least amount, but they're not going to do the most amount. They just want to stay right in the middle, almost unrecognizable. They're just a part of the guy. They're just a guy in the platoon, and they're just riding this storm, and they just want to get through it.
Yep.
Versus thriving through boot camp, like really taking boot camp as a challenge and accepting that challenge, and then understanding that I'm going to forge and do all I can to be the best version of myself. In addition to, you know, what the drill instructors are going to provide for me here. And is there going to be fuckery? Yeah. Are drill instructors going to not like you one day? Yeah. Is speaking up and trying to take charge going to get you in trouble sometimes? Yeah. But are you okay to handle those storms? Potentially more storms than the fit right into the middle guy even ever has to fucking accommodate at all. But is the reward you're thriving through boot camp into your Marine Corps career with the initiative of just being the best version of yourself? And, you know, and guys that take that mentality, and listen, if you're in the military or if you're a Marine listening to this, yes, I know there's fucking bozos that are just want to be gung-ho and they're idiots trying to be leaders and they're doing it the wrong way. I get it. I'm talking about the guys that really wanted to better themselves through boot camp. That mentality, you know, you're going to create a great career for yourself, man. Like, because it's like, dude, why are you here? Are you here to just get by? I don't know if like, okay, so then you're just going to get by in your Marine Corps career. I'm going to tell you right now, I know guys that just got by. And I'm not saying I had the best career. What I am saying, though, is a lot of my skill set and what I'm doing in my life now, post-Marine Corps, was built based off of a mentality and an effort that I was giving during the fucking Marine Corps. If you just got by, then cool, you're just going to continue to get by. And then everything you do, you've never really gone all in, man. You're just going to get by, right? Like, well, then yeah, I understand why you're so fucking scared of these storms. I understand why you don't see these pivots as opportunities. I understand why you don't want to lean into it. Like, you're just going to be a victim of this thing.
Totally, man.
Right? And it's
totally.
Just, but it's like, that mentality doesn't make any sense to me. And I'm even careful to have the conversation with anyone with that mentality because I don't want that to, like, I don't want to rationalize or have that make sense to me. No.
Yeah, no. And, man, the whole, like, the equanimity thing, right? Like, that's a good, I know we've talked about that a little bit, right?
But we have. Do people know what that means?
Your ability to basically, like, keep poise under pressure, right? If we had to summarize it, it's poise under pressure. And, you know, one thing that, I learned super early on, just acknowledging that, hey, like this path that we're going down, it's going to be hard as fuck, right? Mm-hmm. There's like really hard for years and years and years. Like it's just going to be hard. And then even as you continue to level up and get to different phases, when you have that mentality, it's like, yeah, you're leveling up and now it's a new level of hard.
How do you build equity?
It never is actually going to go away. You have to invest, man. That's a great way to put
right?
it.
And when you have equanimity in self, right? When you have equity in self, well, how do you invest in self? Those challenges, man. Mm-hmm. How do you build equity into your home? Well, you've got to invest into that home. Yep. And then that home needs fucking time. And there's going to be ups and downs. But ultimately, if it's property, it's going up. But then you got to what? Man, I got to paint it. I got to remodel it. I got to refurbish it. I got to improve it. Yep. I got to improve this property.
Yep.
If I want to maximize the equity, can you get equity from real estate just by holding on to it in a lot of times? Yes. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about maximizing your equity. Well, okay, mm-hmm. So then how would you do that? Well, you got to invest in yourself. And it's going to take fucking time. And there's going to be ups and downs. And you're going to have to create improvements within yourself that maximize your equity, as in your equanimity.
Yeah.
Right? Like I don't know. It seems like a practical way to put it, but that's how my stupid brain works.
Well,
I'm so thankful for it. I'm so thankful I'm not uber fucking smart to go wrap myself around some rubber band ball and then not be the guy taking action, right?
Dude, yeah. And, you know, coming back to the people that you mentioned earlier, right? Of like, man, they get that little bit of success and now their identity is in that success and maybe that number that they see that they made that month. And when you're attached to that, then, man, that's the bad part because then the blinders come on and you're not reinvesting that equity. You're not, because here's the thing, equity in a home and in yourself,
not if you keep refining.
It's imaginary unless you actually pull it out and do something with it, right?
100%.
Like the number's not doing anything unless you're actually making it do something. So these people that get this number, this success, and then they get attached to it. That's the equivalent of like, ooh, you don't want to see that equity come out of the house anymore. When it's like, yeah, man, it's imaginary. And then guess what? Market downturns, all the equity's gone when you could have taken it, put it into some other shit.
100%.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope, dude.
100%. You know, like, and folks that keep spending all of that, or they're so focused on being proud of like what they've made versus like what they're letting pass by.
Yeah.
You're writing your story, man. It's hard to help people, because a lot of times, just in my experience of coaching and being around individuals, the majority of when I've seen that, it comes from ego. It comes from lack of self-respect, lack of self-identity, and they just want to project and show something versus really embrace and try to identify what they are. I see that. That's the majority. The other one that I see, I just haven't seen too much of it, because I think it happens at a higher level with people that make significantly more. We're talking maybe 5 million or more. I don't know. It's the ones that people talk about where it's like they become so successful, they're scared to continue to invest. It's like they've made it so good. It's like, don't rock the boat. I haven't seen a ton of that, because I think we're still aspiring. Like, some of those guys are worth $100 million plus, right? And that's not us. The majority of what I see are the guys that can make half a mil.
Yep.
You know, and it's like their identity is wrapped in it. And if I'm coaching, man, and the same guys that can make that money also tell me their number one concern is financial, it's like, hey, buddy, why? If you're worried or struggling financially, but you're making a certain amount, it's like, dude, that makes no sense. And it's like, they have this hypertension to like keep going and keep selling to maintain, because they want to maintain a lifestyle or maintain an image. And it's like, if you just stop spending half of what you're spending, you could reinvest that. You could have this many more employees. You could have this. And if you're not having to go out and do all of those sales, you'd have this much fucking time back to build this and build this and build this and understand it, and then have somebody employed that then takes the place of that. Mm-hmm. Right? And they just won't. They just won't. And it's like, dude, you can't make that much money, and then that's your biggest concern. Well, then your biggest concern, it's like, to me, it's an easy answer. Like, hey, sell all of this stuff, get rid of it, put all of that money that's not going to all of these things over to here. Take your time back, because you don't have to do as many accounts. Invest it here.
Yes. Yeah.
But if there's an image you're chasing, or that you have to maintain or keep status, or you know, keep up with the joint, whatever, you're not willing to. It's like you've created your own golden handcuffs. It's like, completely, you're not willing to take that step back, because it's like, sell what? What do you mean sell this?
Yeah.
Sell these cars. It's like, what? Am I even me if I'm not driving that car? I don't know. I guess not, bro.
Yeah.
I guess I'll tell you this much right now. I got a car outside right now. One of 230 ever made.
Yep. It's cool shit.
Doesn't even cost half of what my fucking Lamborghini cost.
Yep.
Twice as much fun.
Yep.
Do the math. Not even half of what my Lamborghini costs, but it's twice as much fun, because I'm going to like what I like, and I'm going to enjoy what I enjoy. And like, dude, I think that's being cool. And dude, there's some nerdy shit that I like and I don't give a fuck. And you know where it comes from, bro? My fucking mom. Mm-hmm. Like, thank God for moms. Thank God for my mom.
Yeah.
Because my mom had me in band.
Yeah.
My mom was an Olympian, right? So she's big into sports. But dude, I was a part of Colorado Honor Band young, and I had to try out, right? I was a drummer, and then my sisters were in it, so I was going in it. I hated going to band every Monday night, bro. My mom and our 68 VW bus, piece of shit. The thing caught fire twice. It broke down countless fucking times, right? Bless her heart, though. Like, my mom was a hippie. She freaking loved that thing, and it was yellow with the white top, like a big classic, Twinkie driving down the fucking road.
Yep.
And, dude, we went, I'm so proud I have a musical background, man. And, like, I go into high school, and I'm in marching band, I'm in symphonic band, I'm in theater class, I'm athletic, I'm starting varsity for baseball all 4 years. I played football.
Yeah.
Like, I had so many friends in so many different, like, circles.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And, like, one of the funnest times I had in high school was not being a jock. One of the funnest times, bro, was when our symphonic band went to Grand Junction, okay, for a concert contest, for a symphonic band competition.
Yep.
And we went and we were staying in these three-story condos in fucking Grand Junction. It was this resort, and these were all individual condos, right? So all of them got rented out for all these bands that came from around the country, dude.
Yeah, that's cool.
And we're there for like 3 nights.
Yeah.
And the amount of fuckery that band that band kids get in.
Oh, yeah.
You football players think you're something? No.
Yep.
Listen to me.
Yep.
The amount of trouble or the amount of funny shit that can happen. But, dude, just going to the sand dunes and having fun like and enjoying. But, like, it was all wrapped around just being in the – I never would have that experience if it wasn't for being a part of band. And my sister was – one of my sisters was a senior that year. So I got to go down there with her. And, dude, it was awesome. But now, as an adult raising children – my kids don't need to play baseball. They're gonna. They love sports. My kids love sports. They're competitive. But, like, I understand the value of that, which also means I don't need anything externally to identify who I am, man. Like, I'm super okay with just me being me.
Yep.
You know, and, like, not to interrupt you, buddy. Something's flashing on my screen.
Let me see.
I just want to make sure our battery is good. Good? Cool. And we don't have to chop this. This is just part of running a podcast. But do you know what I mean? Like, but a part of it is like, so what am I? So it's like, Will, that's a long story long. What are you getting at? Here's what I'm getting at. I think a lot of your character flaws are rooted in just behaviors you've been practicing subconsciously, or the identity you think you're supposed to have subconsciously for so long. Like, your insecurity might not even be your fault. But now that you're an adult, you got to identify and figure out what you're trying to prove to who and for what. What are you trying to prove to who and for what?
Oh, yeah.
What are you trying to prove to who and for what? Like, fucking answer that.
Yeah.
Because there's so many guys where, like, dude, especially some of those that I've coached, it's like, you fucking know better, and I know you know better, but you won't. And for that reason, I'm out, buddy. And I'm out because I got to create space away from that. Like, I can't allow myself to even get consumed from a coaching standpoint with that level of energy. I can't, dude. Like, it's going to continue to cause friction because you and I are not alike. We are not the same. And it's only going to start to create more friction versus, look, man, I'm not going to try to change who you are if you're not willing to change yourself. No problem. I'm going to let my energy go this way and flow this way. You let your energy go and flow that way because I'm not your boss. I'm not here to dictate what you do. I just don't want to go downstream with you.
Yep.
I'm over here on this path. And if it doesn't align, no problem. But guys, you got, like, if you feel like you side more with me, with some of, like, my mindset, you got to make sure that your energy is flowing in the right direction, man. Like, stop trying to convince people of shit.
Yep. And I promise you too, like, that's where it's real hard, man, without having the right people in your corner to see those things in yourself, right? To be able to self-identify what that thing is, because it's extremely hard, right? Yeah. You have this own perception of yourself, which could be really, really far off. And until you go and eat like a handful of mushrooms sometime, it's really hard to get this outside perspective within yourself,
sure,
right? And be able to actually make this lasting change.
Yeah.
It's hard, man.
I've done that with you. I see the benefit of it, right? And then I also go so practical. Like, opportunities like this escrow company. Buddy, 2 years ago, I wouldn't even be able to connect the dots because I wouldn't even know if I've got the ability to help that thing grow. But when it comes, like, everything always comes at the right time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when this opportunity comes and we decide, like, yeah, we're going to do it. We're going to buy it with our boys, right? Like, it's not like a sole purchase. It's my confidence in how we're going to be able to, one, understand all of those conversations and where the decisions that us as board of directors are going to have to make, et cetera, et cetera. But I understand our skill set and the tools that we've created. So when we're having these discussions about this company, I understand exactly how we're going to navigate that book of business.
Completely.
I understand exactly how we're going to go navigate more business. I understand how we're going to navigate it as far as, like, maintaining everything. I know how we're going to keep it legal. I know the people that should be in place for the roles that they are. And I know exactly why we're saying yes, because of the people that are currently in place with this company that we believe in.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the investment is more so in the people, not just the concept. The concept you can do anywhere.
Yeah, the concept sold already. Yeah.
It's right. It's the people that are within it that we believe in. But how do we even, you know, get to a place of where we can have that judgment and that vision? Well, it's because we've built what we've built already. So, like, we've climbed a mountain, we can see the other mountaintops. Like, you, when you climb a mountain, you establish something, right, that's successful, and you're looking at all these other mountains now. So it's like, oh, that's a different mountain than this one. And I can see a couple different challenges on that mountain, but I've conquered some of those type of challenges on this mountain. So I've got all the gear and ability to do it. I'm just going to go climb that different mountain, but I'm taking a skill set and experience and then actual tools that I built along the way climbing this fucking mountain over to that one. If you're still climbing a mountain, you have no idea what these other mountains look like. And you barely understand the one that you're on.
Yeah.
And what the top of that looks like. And you don't know what it takes yet to get to the top of that one. But once you do, by building systems and processes and infrastructure and CRMs and all this shit, you fucking motherfuckers don't want to build, you're going to understand how this is a machine now that we can then put into place with anything as long as conceptually you understand the business. If you understand the business that you're getting into, the next lane that you're getting into, if you understand it, then you understand how these tools and how this machine you've built can plug into that. If you don't, then it won't. Like, you're not going to have me building a restaurant right now because the machine I've built isn't for that.
Right.
Correct? I'd have to go build another machine as in I'd have to go learn fucking, I'm not doing that.
No.
But there's so many different lanes within real estate and things that are related to real estate and financial shit and lending shit that you can, that it does apply to. But you'll never get there because you never want to build the machine. It's just, it's always transaction to transaction. You know, like my biggest bummer, whether you're in, I don't know, whether you're in insurance, whether you're in real estate, lending, like something that I get proud of for people, but I get tired of hearing it, personal production.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm so proud of people that can accomplish a certain level of personal production because Eli and I pride ourselves on certain levels of production with our team. With our, you know, with what we've built now with Mile High Property Brothers, like we're so proud of it. But it's like, that's it. Like there's some people, it's like, you're still just talking about that. That means that's all you have going for yourself. And hey, brother, sister, I don't want that for you. Like I want more for you. And I don't know if you see it, but dude, I get so mildly interested toward people wanting to talk personal. And guys, I'm talking people that do 100 million a year, 200 million a year. I'm not talking about the ones that think they're doing well. Right. At a certain level, it's like, I guess it's all encompassing, but it's like, man, like it's so one dimensional. It's just, it's like, it's frustrating. Right. And I know there's a topic related to that you wanted to talk about today. And I just had it in my mind, but it's like, and I'll think of it as you're talking.
Yep.
But I think it's related to what I just said of like,
just being so pigeonholed, niched down.
That's it. Yep. You just said it, niched down.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man, there's a vulnerability to it.
There is,
right.
There is, yeah, there is, huge vulnerability, man. And, you know, especially when, you know, like one thing I love about us is that, you know, we're good at a lot of things, right? We're really good at a lot of things and there's an argument of like, okay, hey, jack of all trades, master of none, you know.
Finish that quote though. Google that real quick for me, would you?
Yeah, I like this. Right? Okay.
Because motherfuckers always fuck that up, just like they fuck the Bible up. The more I've been reading the Bible, the more I realize how fucking for stupid real, right? People are. Yeah, dude. They'll take a sentence of something.
Yep.
It's no different than media. You'll take a sentence of what someone says. You won't add the other 3 to 4 sentences they say. But if you Google the full quote of that, that's not what it means. Read it out.
The complete saying, a jack of all trades is a master of none, but oftentimes better than a master of one.
God damn it.
Yeah.
How the fuck do you leave that out?
Yeah.
Now, understanding this, how broad is a master of one? Is one just real estate as a whole? Or is it just transactions? Or is it just escrow? Is it just title? I don't know. It's all for whoever to interpret how they interpret. Yeah. But here's what I am going to say. If you're an entrepreneur, I don't know if you can afford the risk of just being a master of one thing. There's too many unknown variables. There's too many storms. There's too many pivots. There's too many things outside of your control to where if that's it and you're putting all of your cards, like all your eggs in one basket, it's just, there's risk to it. So like for us, right? I don't see real estate as master of one. Real estate is so
multifaceted.
Buddy, commercial investing, land development, residential property, fix and flips,
title, escrow, insurance, lending.
Those are all ones, if you ask me.
Yeah.
So if we're going to be a jack of all trades, and hey, Will, if you do that, could somebody that's only doing one of those lanes arguably be better than you at that one lane? Potentially.
At a moment.
Potentially.
In a moment.
At a moment. But what happens when that floods?
That
what happens
passes. When that thing
100%? Yeah. So when we talk about jack of all trades, what you have to understand is Elon and I have built these jack of all trades per se. We're in pursuit of being jacks of all trades, one at a fucking time.
Yep.
It's not we do everything at once and then, yeah, you suck at all of them. It's, dude, we fucking mastered production. Personal production, we fucking mastered. Then we fucking started understanding and mastering building a brand and and the business behind the brand. Then we mastered leadership and scalability through influence within other people within our space for acquisition of agents, right? Mm-hmm. Then we mastered how to understand how to build courses and things digitally that give people things at scale that don't require us training time to teach them. We'll still teach them, but now they can go to our university. Now they can go to our YouTube course. Now they can go here. And we built real items that people can watch whenever they want that don't require our time every time to teach them something. Now they've got an encyclopedia to go for all of your general 80% shit, right?
Yep.
Which saves our time. We learned that. Now we're starting to dive in and invest in escrow because, well, we understand it. But now there's an opportunity to invest in it to help run. It's like we've built these one at a time. And this is what I mean about when people tell me they've got 20 years of experience in real estate. Maybe, or do you have 1 year of experience that you've done 20 times?
Yep.
A lot of times it's that. It's you've got 1 year of experience that you've done 20 times because you're still talking to me about personal production. And don't get me wrong, man. I love production. I love the sale. I love the relationship with clients. I love negotiations. I love doing a great job and creating a great client experience. The reality is it's just bigger than that if you want to learn how to survive and scale in business. So you and I have taken the time each year or sometimes every 2 years to really continue our progress into building the next pillar. And it seems daunting, but it's really not. We've been in this game together, buddy, for 6 years.
Yeah.
Right? And we still have a long fucking way to go. But it's not so much about identifying how far you have to go. It's identifying where progress needs to be made and the right path and direction in accomplishing that, right? Mm-hmm. And staying out of your own fucking way that will limit your progress and your ability to scale and have a successful business versus just being self-employed.
Yeah, yeah. And then the final layer, and this is something that, you know, I feel like has really been not even a focus of mine, but I've been realizing it more is as we've been doing this, man, just how much enjoyment we've had over the past 6 years, right? Because the last thing that I want to do is, man, do all of this grinding, hate every minute of it with this idea that somehow magically when I'm 55, that now I'm going to be able to enjoy this.
Dude, that was my biggest fear as a cop. Because bless their hearts, bro, that's one of the hardest jobs there is, and I love those dudes. When I was first coming in to being a police officer, this is just after the crash had happened, okay? So, like, I think I became a cop beginning of 11 or 12.
Okay.
Well, this is just after 08, 09.
Yeah.
Like, you had not just a housing crash. You just had an economy crash. Mm-hmm. Stocks were terrible. Guys that had been cops, bro, for 25 years that had $1 million saved up with their retirement, and then they do their deferred comp where, like, you can put in your own money to a separate retirement. Bro, they fucking crashed.
Gone.
These guys had to go from spending, they were cops 25 years. We had some cops that had to stay on until year 35 just to make back what they lost in the market, bro. Ugh. It cost you a fucking decade, bro.
Yeah.
Do you understand what 10 years of police work is? It's hard, dude.
Dude,
I did five.
Yeah,
fuck. Right. It's all good. I wasn't, you know, like 5 years will give you a great concept.
Five's
of like,
a lot,
buddy. Imagine when you've done 25 to do five more.
Yeah, fuck.
And now, arguably, if you're in command staff and you're in the office and a lot of these guys were still patrol officers. But this is what I mean. It's like, like the money aspect and investing in your retirement into your deferred comp and all great things, all uncertain, all out of your control. All uncertain, and it took such a hit, you had to work another 10 years just to get it back. Yeah. Some guys just weren't willing to do that, and they made back enough.
Yeah.
And they did another six or seven, and they were done. But it's like, you want to talk about uncertainty?
Right, dude.
At least, like, when you and I, if you and I take a loss at something, we have the ability to navigate our own decisions and how-tos and put the work in to create it back. And, like, you know, it's just interesting where people see certain frames of reference and how they decide to see it and go about it.
It's true.
You know, but either way, I'm excited, man. We've been working hard and we've been doing a lot of great things, and I'm excited to give back to our agents. I'm excited to continue to, the better we become, the better our agents become because of the influence if they choose to take it. I'm excited where some of our things are going and the people that we're partnering with and just continuing to lead in and fucking grind it out, buddy.
That's right, dude. Yeah.
But
that's
it is right. Fun. Like when we hang out with these dudes in Cali and we'll leave their names out of it for now. Like, they're pretty important people in California. Some of them are VPs of certain real estate companies that are deciding to come to us, and we'll just leave that out for now. But it's fun, man. It's fun, like all the stories they got from being dads and life and traveling, or just like you and I traveling, man. Like, I think of like how many times I drug your ass to First Form in a truck because I didn't want to fly. So we drove 12 hours, or dude, just all the fucking self growth, laughs, cries, just fun times. Like, it's just cool. Like, it's cool. Like, it's, you know, it's when, you know, it's when like guys come, like, you know, like how we talk as Marines, like you talk about your deployments or you talk about your training, and like you get to look back at it and just talk about the training and just the funny stuff, or, you know, it's, that's kind of what makes it what it is, right? Like, that's kind of like the aging process to a fine whiskey. It's just got to sit in that barrel, right? Like, that's kind of like us in business, of like our aging process of like everything that happens between now and making it, you know, per se, and just all the fun stuff and the relationships behind it. And, you know, like if you got everything you wanted right now, like what would you do the rest of your life? Like, it'd be, oh my God, you know, but then it's like, you got to continue to have improvement. I know Tony Robbins talks, I'll leave you with this. Tony Robbins talks a lot about it, and he's helped people that are billionaires. He's helped people that are at the lowest of the lows. Yep. And he always talks about a certain level of happiness coming from progress, regardless of where you're at, still finding ways to grow and progress. So even if you're a billionaire and you know, I make $1 billion tomorrow, we'd still have to find a way to have progress and impact on something, or like that inner fire, that ambition, like it's not being served. Mm-hmm. And regardless of what possession you have, you're not happy.
Yep.
Right. Yep. So I think internally, like, it's just a pursuit of our progress and knowing that we're getting there and we're doing it together. Like, it's just, it's intoxicating, man.
It is, dude. It is. Man, that's a good way to end it.
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, we're intoxicated. Now I know what my mom used to say, bless her heart. I shouldn't be trying to score a point on my mom when she's already passed away. Sorry, mom. She would always tell me, like, because she told me she was a hippie. Well, I was a hippie. So I'd ask, like, you used to get high? I used to ask my mom all the time. She's like, she's like, Will, I don't need to get high. I never need to get high. I got high off of life.
That's a real hippie, and, dude.
Buddy.
That's a real hippie.
That's right, a real hippie. But I always used to think that was, like, the biggest cop-out. But, like, as much as my mom accomplished between mountain rescue climbing and sports and being a mother, it's like, you know, I think I'm starting to understand the concept of, all right, if you're not lying to me and it wasn't weed, you really got high off of life. It's like, I can understand what she means about just the journey of accomplishing things and just how it feels and who you're becoming along the way, man. It's pretty cool.
It is, dude. Yeah. And not to keep going on about that, but like, I remember, like, you know, you like, if I mentioned like being on Adderall or something, and you're like, man, I don't know if I like need that or da 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 da. And I think you tried it once. You're like, yeah, no. And I'm like, bro, I'm literally taking this to feel like you, like how you already are, how fast you talk, how fast you connect dots, like how you interact with people. I'm taking this to try and do that.
But then I took mushrooms to slow down, to pause.
There,
right?
Like,
it's just the ebb and flow of all. But that I think that's what my mom means. Is like, just whether you're stepping on the gas pedal and moving and shaking, or the moments to pause and reflect, and maybe it's even talking on a podcast, whatever it is. It's like when I've tried mushrooms with you, it's like we went somewhere in the mountains, had a baller ass fucking cabin to hang out in. And like the environment itself forces you to just pause and enjoy. You're not in a rush to go anywhere, which allows you to kind of like embrace a moment. And I remember what I told you, this is one of the biggest moments I had, cause I think I've been practicing it ever since. So if there was one takeaway from mushrooms that really helped me that I still use today, that I'm mindful of, it was, we were in the height of the mushroom experience, we'll call right? And you kind of had to convince me to take mushrooms. Even though I was like, yeah, I'm in, but like I was still kind of nervous or whatever. And we're at like the height of it, and I'm experiencing it, and bless your heart, you're the perfect person to try it for the first time, because you were letting me talk and just, I was giving you in real time my thoughts of just life and experience. And then you said this, you said, hey, see, I told you, right? And I was like, what? And you go, hey, like, this was a good idea. Like, mushrooms is cool, right?
Like, what are your thoughts or something?
Yeah, and you're like, you were asking me to, like, speak on almost like how you'd want Kobe Bryant to talk about after the game.
Yeah.
But when Kobe's in the game, you're not going to ask him to talk about the game.
Yeah.
After the game, he'll reflect. And for the first time in probably my life, I don't know, but definitely in the first time in our relationship, you asked a question that way, almost like you were interviewing me as a journalist and I was a basketball player playing the game. But in my mind, I was still in the game. And I was like, Eli, we'll talk about that tomorrow. Right now, let's just be here. Yeah. And you were like, dude, cool. And you're like, that's so mushroom right there. And like, I said it so naturally.
Yeah.
I'd never really said something like that. But, you know, the biggest lesson from it was going up to the cabin and just having our own space, not being in a rush to go anywhere and really be present at a moment. Even at a micro level of just enjoying a moment with my kiddo, that might be 20 minutes or five. It's like, I'm just learning how to be a little bit more tempered and, hey, when to use speed and move and shake, but then when to use some temperance, but then when to use some patience, and then when to use nothing but just being. I'm just going to be in a moment.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's what I took from that, right? Yeah. Which was super, super serving, super beneficial.
Yeah.
And I think I like had something nice to say about Kate too, but
Later. Nah. Plenty of time for that. That's awesome. That's cool, awesome. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, man.
Listening and patience and all that. That's just fun. Again, a lot of stuff going on in our world, a lot of stuff going on in real estate, a lot of stuff just going on in the world right now.
Yeah.
I like these conversations where we can just open up, talk some shit, see what's going on that's relevant right now.
And like you said, there's a lot going on, right? So I guess what I'll leave everybody with is like, just start to have the mentality of like, hey, how much of an opportunity can I turn this into? What can I really do to lean into whatever my circumstances are right now to really take control of it within what I have control of and really influence an outcome? Like, take advantage of some ambition and maybe start playing more offense, right? Maybe play a little bit more offense and let's start scoring some touchdowns versus always trying to figure out how to play the defense side of the ball, right? Like, just really lean in and just grow some ambition and some motivation around, like, what can I do with these opportunities?
I love it. Yeah, yeah. Hell yeah. Appreciate you guys listening.
Love you guys.
Day $1.00.
We're out of here.